how the cousins had closed in on her, only to be interrupted by Murphy himself, leading an impromptu parade through the library. "You know you didn't have to go back in there alone." She could hear a hint of restrained anger in his voice. "I would have gone with you." She gave a sad smile. "No, you would have tried to talk me out of it. Probably with good reason." Her hand flew up to her throat. "But I had to find Murphy, Wallace. I had to take the chance." "You always do, don't you?" He glanced at her, then looked quickly back to the road. "Look, I'm not mad, Veronica. I'm just worried that someday the unstoppable force is gonna meet the immovable object." "Wait, which one am I?" she joked. "No, don't answer that." He snorted. "So you found this Murphy guy. Do you think he did it? Took the girls?" She stared out at the world rolling away outside her window. "I don't know anymore. I went in thinking Willie Murphy was the one behind the disappearances. But you should have seen the guy's face when Eduardo grabbed me. He was terrified. And he waltzed back in with Dick and those girls and probably saved my life." "Yeah, but he had the necklace, right?" Wallace glanced at her, his fingers drumming along the steering wheel. "He had to be involved somehow." He was right, but she couldn't shake the feeling that something didn't fit. Willie Murphy didn't look like a guy who could handle violence, much less one who liked it. And he'd come back. Scared as he was, he'd come back, because it was the only way he knew to keep Eduardo from killing her. "Maybe Murphy's just their cleanup crew," she said, thinking out loud. "Maybe Eduardo or Rico or both of them killed Haley and Aurora, either because the girls found out something they shouldn't have or because the guys just like killing. Or maybe Eduardo assumes anyone who's caught sneaking around the house is an assassin. He's pretty jumpy. Then they call in Murphy to clean up, dispose of the bodies, and Murphy saw the necklace and just couldn't help himself." She rubbed her forehead. "Well, it doesn't matter. Lamb's going to hang him out to dry. Willie Murphy is the definition of low-hanging fruit. He's got a record, and he looks sketchy as hell." Wallace was quiet for a moment, then he spoke. "So do you think the girls are dead?" She didn't answer. The raw cut along her throat throbbed gently. There wasn't any way of knowing for sure what had happened to those girls, but after what she'd just been through, the little flicker of hope that she'd been holding on to throughout her investigation was guttering. They turned left into Veronica's neighborhood. Here the houses were dark and silent, their occupants still asleep. Somewhere a dog barked, deep-voiced and lonely. They pulled up in front of the bungalow. She suddenly realized she'd have to tell Keith what had happened in a few short hours. That would be a nightmare. "Thank goodness for the U.S. Navy. I can at least put off telling Logan. The last thing I need is for my boyfriend to pick a fight with an international crime syndicate." "You want me to come in with you?" Wallace turned his head to look at her, his brow furrowed. She shook her head. "No, I don't want to wake up Dad." She reached across to pat his arm with a forced joviality. "I'm okay. I'll call you tomorrow, at a reasonable hour this time." "Veronica!" He hesitated, then shook his head. "You sure you're okay?" She gave a weak smile. "I'm always okay." Then, seeing he wasn't buying it, she hugged him around the neck. "Thanks again, Wallace. For everything." She jumped out of the car and headed up the stairs to her house. He waited until she'd gotten in the door before driving back out to the street. And for about the millionth time in her life, she felt an overwhelming gratitude for her best friend. Because she knew he wouldn't mention this afterward. She knew he wouldn't take it as a sign that she was losing her nerve or was in too deep. There weren't many people in this world who would let you be vulnerable and still believe you were strong. Chapter 21. The sun was thin and pale on the courthouse steps the next morning as the crowd of reporters gathered before it, cameras at the ready. The dramatic capture of Willie Murphy by the Balboa County Sheriff's Department had made the early morning news, and Lamb had called a 9 a.m. press conference to make it all official. A low buzz rippled over the crowd as well-coiffed newscasters murmured to their viewers that in just minutes, they'd have exclusive live coverage involving the missing Neptune Spring Breakers. Veronica was facing the podium, Keith on one side of her and Mac on the other. She would have been happy to watch the coverage from home, but Petra Landros had called her a little over an hour earlier asking her to be there. She hadn't been able to sleep. Her nerves had been too ragged. But she'd showered and pinned her hair in a sleek, professional bun. Somewhat passive-aggressively, she wore a scoop-neck top under her blazer, making the long red line across her neck as obvious as she could. "Go on and let someone ask me about it," she thought. "I'll let them know who did this in no uncertain terms." She looked out of the corner of her eye at Keith. He stood with both hands propped on the head of his cane, his expression stony. That morning he'd been silent, his face drawn as he listened to her describe the events of the night before. Then he'd hugged her close, seemingly unable to speak. She'd seen his eyes dart to the revolver in the wooden box, but Keith refrained from lecturing her. By the time she'd come out of her room, groomed and ready to go to the courthouse, he'd been in a suit and tie waiting by the door. And he must have called Mac, because she met them there, bleary-eyed but anxious, with three coffees in to-go cups. Veronica was grateful. Standing in front of all these people alone, waiting to hear Lamb act as though the case were solved while ignoring the most important piece, the violent cartel cousins, might have put her over the edge. She glanced around the crowd. The DeWalts stood a few yards away, Mike's arms wrapped around Ella's shoulders from behind. Crane looked strained, edgy, his eyes wide and panicked. Tears rolled down Margie's cheeks. Veronica glanced around to look for her mother and found her, near the back of the crowd, with Hunter gathered in her arms, her face buried in his neck. Next to her, Tanner stood and stared blankly around like a man who didn't know where he was. She wondered if Petra had asked them to come too, or if they were as desperate for information as the reporters. "Ms. Mars." She turned around, startled, to see Petra Landros right in front of her. Her thick dark hair was pinned back in a somber twist, and her Armani suit was an understated charcoal gray tailored to hug her curves. "You must be proud," Petra said, shaking Veronica's hand. "You caught the bad guy." She turned to face Keith. "And you must be the notorious Mr. Mars. I'm so pleased to meet you." Keith's eyebrows shot up. "Notorious?" "Your tenure as sheriff wasn't the most pro-business we've ever had, you know, but your name came up again and again as the chamber talked about whom we should hire to find Haley. Everyone says you're the best." The hint of a smile tugged her lips upward. "In any case, your daughter certainly upheld your firm's reputation." She turned back to Veronica. "Now, shall I wire you payment, or would you like to come to my office for a check right now?" Veronica frowned.
"Usually I don't get paid until the case is closed, Miss Landros. We still haven't found those girls."
Petra's smile faded quickly. She adopted a concerned, sincere expression.
"Of course," she said. "If we can recover the girls, we'd love to do that for the families."
Veronica's jaw tightened involuntarily. It wasn't hard to read the writing on the wall. As far as the Chamber of Commerce was concerned, the case was resolved. Willie Murphy was a perfect suspect, whether he'd done anything to the missing girls or not. "The semblance of law and order is just as good as the real thing, right? As long as it keeps the tourist dollars flowing, who cares if we've got the right guy?" The crowd suddenly went still as Lamb made his way to the podium. Cameras shuffled around, microphones bristling forward. Veronica straightened up a little. Lamb's khaki uniform was perfectly pressed, each button gleaming in the sun. He gave a dramatic pause as he stared arrogantly around the gathered crowd, then looked down at his notes.
"Early this morning, at just after 12 a.m.,
We arrested a suspect in the disappearances of Haley DeWalt and Aurora Scott. William Murphy, age 24, was seen with both girls prior to their disappearances. I can't discuss the evidence in an ongoing case, but... The reporters broke into a clamor. Next to her, her father stood with his knuckles white on the handle of his cane. Mac gave a contemptuous little grimace, shifting her weight. At the podium, Lamb lifted his hands with a benevolent, patronizing smile. One at a time, please, one at a time. What are you charging him with? Shouted a bespectacled man with wisps of hair across his scalp. Do you know what happened to Haley and Aurora? Has Murphy confessed? Asked a dark-haired woman in a violet-flowered suit. Or do you have some physical evidence linking him to the crime? Where are the girls? Veronica couldn't tell where the voice came from, but the question was echoed a few more times around the courtyard. Where are Haley and Aurora? Are you going to be able to bring them home? Lamb cleared his throat. At this time, we are moving ahead with a murder investigation. A spike of sound went up from the crowd. A few gasps, a ragged sob. Veronica exchanged a glance with Keith. Had Murphy copped to something? Or was Lamb going for maximum effect? Again, I'm not at liberty to discuss the specifics of the case at this time, because we are still talking with the DA about how to move ahead. But the important thing is that we've got this guy off the street, and Neptune is safe again. Sheriff Lamb, some people are saying that Murphy is involved in a larger criminal organization. Can you speak to these rumors? So they weren't completely stupid. Veronica wasn't surprised that the question had come from Martina Vasquez, a reporter for San Diego's local news station. Lamb's eyes darted toward her, his mouth gaping for just a moment before he collected himself. Well, Martina, I can't respond to rampant speculation, and frankly, I think it's irresponsible for the media to report hearsay as fact. He leaned one arm on the lectern, smiling at Martina as if she'd just made some cute and childish mistake. Mac made a strangled noise in the back of her throat. Hard to believe he's single, isn't it? Veronica whispered. But she couldn't hide her grin. If anyone was going to dig a little deeper, it would be Martina Vasquez, who seemed to like the sheriff's department about as much as Veronica did. Maybe she could even send Martina an anonymous tip or two about the Gutierrez boys. A little media attention might help Lamb take an interest in the cartel's laundering operation. "Do you think Murphy will lead you to the girls' bodies?" someone asked from the crowd. Lamb fidgeted with the note cards he'd prepared. "So far, he's not offering any information, but I have faith we'll get it out of him sooner or later. Once he realizes he's got no choice, it'll just be a matter of time." Next to her, Veronica heard Keith exhale a small, exasperated sigh. His jaw was tight, but he watched the proceedings without any other reaction. She knew that poker face from experience. The deeper the anger, the harder the puzzle, the higher the stakes, the calmer Keith Mars looked, which meant that right now, he was pissed. A few yards away, Margie DeWalt wept silently into her handkerchief. Veronica met Ella's eyes for one long, awful moment, forcing herself not to look away. Her breath felt tight in her chest. She saw Mr. DeWalt, pulling his phone out of his pocket, sticking his finger in his left ear to block out the sound of the crowd as he answered. His expression was confused. Then the crowd shifted, obscuring him from sight for a moment. "All right, if there are no further questions..." "Oh my God, she's alive!" People turned and craned their necks to see where the sudden cry had come from. A moment later, Veronica caught sight of Mike DeWalt, his face a mask of anxious astonishment. He had a cell phone clamped to one ear. A murmur went up from the crowd, only to die down as Mike spoke. "Haley's still alive!" His voice was a breathy croak. His eyes looked wild. "And so's the other girl. They're still alive!" He held up his cell phone as if it were some kind of proof. His eyes were fearful and excited all at once. "Their kidnappers just called, and they want a ransom!" Chapter 22. Interrogation Room B hadn't changed at all in the almost 10 years Veronica had been away. Dark wood wainscoting, dingy yellow paint, a chalkboard scrawled with what at first looked to be clues to some convoluted mystery, but that turned out to be fantasy football scores. It was just like stepping into a time warp. Except instead of a vain, lazy, incompetent Sheriff Lamb, now we've got a vain, lazy, corrupt Sheriff Lamb. She looked across the table at Lamb's glowering face. He'd just been upstaged, and he wasn't happy. The room was at capacity. Veronica and Keith sat across from Dan Lamb and Petra Landros. Mike, Margie, and Ella DeWalt sat close together on the side to Veronica's left, Crane standing behind them. To Keith's right sat the Scots. Leanne was inches from Keith, which sent an anxious, electric charge up the back of Veronica's neck every time she glanced their way. Keith and Leanne hadn't seen each other in more than 10 years now. Their divorce had been quick and uncontested, a signature on a piece of paper. Veronica had worried their presence in the same room would be like matter and antimatter, exploding on contact in a rush of blinding light. But all that had happened had been a smile, a handshake, a civil exchange.
"Hello, Keith."
"Leanne? It's good to see you. Sorry for the circumstances, though."
And then they'd sat down. That was all. Veronica looked around the table at the other faces. Mike DeWalt's eyes were bright with relief. Margie couldn't stop crying, her face hidden behind her enormous handkerchief. Ella looked pale, her lips and eyes like dark marks on paper. Behind them, Crane clutched the back of a chair, his fingers white. On the other side of the table, Tanner and Leanne held hands. Hunter sat on her lap, resting his head against her shoulder and looking at no one. They'd all just heard that their daughters had been murdered, only to get what felt like a reprieve minutes later. A sense of cautious relief hung in the air.
"The email address it came from is just a bunch of scrambled numbers," Mike said, setting his phone on the table. "But it had a sound file in it. What's it called, sweetie?"
"MP3, Ella said in a soft, distant voice.
"MP3, he repeated. "Here, listen."
He hit play. A man's voice came through the speaker, garbled through some kind of voice modulator so it sounded like a child's toy robot.
"DeWaltz, your daughter is alive. If you want to see her again, follow our instructions to the letter. We want $600,000 in unmarked, non-sequential bills. Pack it in a small suitcase. Do not try to put any trackers or dye into the money. This will result in your daughter's immediate death. Do not involve the cops. This will result in your daughter's immediate death. We will be in contact on the evening of the 26th to instruct you on where to leave the money. Do not try to set up some kind of sting, as we are watching every move you make. For the time being, she is safe and comfortable, but very scared. To prove she's alive, we asked her to tell us something only she would know. She said, 'You once let slip that she'd been conceived to Meatloaf's I'd Do Anything for Love.' She said only you, Mrs. DeWalt, Mr. DeWalt, and she know that fact. Do not try to outsmart us. If you follow the instructions to a T, you will have your daughter back again by the weekend. We do not want to be violent, but if we have to, we will."
Margie hid her face entirely now, her sobs loud and ringing in the quiet room. Ella wrapped a slender arm around her mother's neck, her face pinched and scared. For a moment, no one spoke.
"Someone's been tracking the money on the website," Veronica said. Her voice felt too loud in the quiet room. "They're asking for the exact amount of money raised. That's not an accident."
"Ours is almost the same," Tanner finally said.
He wore a T-shirt with a picture of his daughter printed across the front. It said, "Find Aurora," in large, dark pink letters across her forehead. The creases in his face seemed deeper, more graven than before. He thumbed a button on his phone to play the message. He was right. It was the same, word for word, until it got to the paragraph on proof of life. Aurora said she and Leanne made gingerbread pancakes together in the middle of the night during Tanner's last relapse. You were waiting for him to come home, and you made the pancakes to kill time and fed them to the dog. That was years ago, Leanne whispered. She was 12 or 13. I don't think we've ever talked about it since. She took a shuddering breath and looked around the room, her eyes round, hopeful. But this is good news, right? It means the girls are still alive. It means we can get them back. Lamb cleared his throat. He seemed to be fighting to keep his face sympathetic, but it wasn't a natural expression for him. The effect came across almost passive-aggressive, like he actually was going to kill someone with kindness. I don't want to dash your hopes, folks, but there are almost always hoax ransom demands that come in after a disappearance. The Lindbergh baby, Jean Benet. It's possible that this is some kind of prank or con. Margie let out a gasping sob. There's no way Haley would have told anyone about that song. She was so embarrassed. It came on the radio one night we were making dinner, and I thought it was funny. I couldn't help myself. I had to tell her, but she ran to her room and hid for the rest of the night. She might have told a friend, a boyfriend, Lamb said. No, you don't know Haley like I do. She was furious that I told her. I can't imagine her telling anyone else. Lamb sighed. Look, I just want to caution you all not to get your hopes up. We'll look into every possible lead here, but the fact is, we have a suspect in custody who we can place at the scene of both crimes, and we have physical evidence tying him to one of the disappearances. The signs are not looking good, and it would be a mistake to comply with these demands. That was when Leanne spoke, and Veronica saw it. Saw a glimpse of her mother, the woman who'd been married to a cop, who'd been willing to fight for things she loved when the vodka wasn't pickling her brain. A mistake? Leanne leaned forward. Listen to me, Sheriff. As long as there's a chance of finding Aurora alive, we'll take it. We'll do anything we have to do to get her back. Landros, her face much more convincing than Lamb's in its mask of sympathy, held up her hands. Her pillowy lips were turned down, her dark eyes gentle. Please, Mrs. Scott, we're here to help. Rest assured we will do everything in our power to bring the girls home, alive and well. With startling intensity, Leanne whipped her head around to face Keith and Veronica. What do you think, Keith? Keith shook his head.
I haven't been working this case. I can't really speak to the details. It's Veronica we should be asking.
All eyes settled on Veronica. Her heart picked up speed, and her hand, almost unconsciously, drifted up to touch the cut at her neck. Well, she said carefully, I don't know anything for sure, but I'm not convinced Willie Murphy's our guy. Lamb looked at her incredulously.
You're the one who's brought me the evidence, Mars. Now you're saying, I'm saying, that we don't know the whole story yet, she said, speaking over him. Murphy risked his life to help me back at the Gutierrez house. I think he knows something about what happened to the girls, but I'm not convinced he's a kidnapper. Or a murderer. And we're all ignoring the fact that he was in custody when the ransom notes came in. Either he has an accomplice, or he didn't do it.
They stared at each other across the formica, the space between them electric with mutual loathing. She kept her gaze level, her chin slightly raised. On the adjacent side of the table, Margie DeWalt looked up from her handkerchief.
Can we use the money from the reward funds to pay the ransom? Is that something we're allowed to do, Miss Landros? I know it was supposed to pay for the reward, but so far it hasn't helped us find her. Maybe it can help us bring her home.
Crane suddenly spoke, his voice loud and sneering.
Look, this guy they arrested had her necklace. He obviously killed her.
He jerked his head toward Veronica.
Like she said, Willie was already in jail when the emails were sent. Whoever sent these notes, they're just trying to get your money.
Mike DeWalt shot to his feet. His face was terrifying, his thick, bushy brows low over his eyes. Wordlessly, he grabbed his son's shirt front, pulling Crane roughly toward him. Margie shrieked, shoving her chair away from them both. Veronica caught sight of Ella's face, a sudden protective blank. Before anyone else could move, Keith stood from his chair. He held both hands up non-threateningly, but he took a few careful steps toward the two men.
"Mr. DeWalt, please. You're in a courthouse. I don't want to see you in the lockup. Not when we should be focused on how to bring Haley home."
His voice was quiet but firm, a tone that was more compassionate than chastising. The room was otherwise silent. Veronica realized she was holding her breath, her muscles tense. Mike froze, staring down into his son's face for another beat. Then he let go. Crane leaned against the wall, shaking. Whether from anger or fear, Veronica didn't know. Petra waited until Mike had sat back down before speaking again.
"As to your question, Mrs. DeWalt, I will talk to the lawyers this afternoon to make certain, but I see no reason not to use the donations any way we must."
It was Tanner who broke the silence.
"What about a ransom specialist?"
The gravity in the room shifted, all eyes moving down the table to his exhausted face. He looked around at them all.
"A what?"
Petra stared at him blankly. He looked apologetic, like bringing it up was somehow awkward.
"You know, the people who handle the ransom so it all goes according to plan? They had a thing about it on Dateline a couple years back. Lots of security firms are doing that kind of thing these days."
He licked his dry lips, looking around the table. Margie glanced at her husband, obviously interested in the idea. Lamb scowled but remained silent.
"Well, of course, if you feel it's the best way to handle the situation," Petra began.
Leanne stood up abruptly, holding Hunter against her chest.
"I think we do."
She gave Lamb a withering look.
"I'd feel a little safer with a professional on my side."
Veronica knew the barb was directed at Lamb, but she still flinched internally. As if she weren't a professional, as if she hadn't done her best to bring the girls home. But Leanne was already halfway out the door, Hunter in her arms. Tanner gave the table an awkward smile and hurried after her. With that, the meeting seemed to be adjourned. Crane stormed out ahead of his family, shoving violently through the door. Everyone else rose slowly, gathering their belongings with tentative movements. Veronica took one last look at Lamb, then left, Keith close behind her.
"You okay?"
Keith asked Veronica when they were on the steps outside. She smiled faintly.
"Yeah, I'm okay."
But her heart felt heavy as they walked back to the car together. For once, she had a feeling that Lamb might be right. Not about Willie Murphy, but about those emails being a hoax. And somewhere in the pit of her stomach, she had the uneasy feeling that the girls weren't going to make it home. If the families paid out, someone was going to get away with fraud at best, and at worst, murder. Chapter 23. Veronica's hands wouldn't stop shaking. She held the revolver straight out from her body and breathed slowly, deeply, the hot metal smell stinging her nostrils. She tried to relax her shoulders, then she pulled the trigger. It was early afternoon on Saturday. She'd come to the range by herself, slipping out the door once she'd heard her dad start his lawnmower in the backyard. She didn't want him to see her sneak into the kitchen like a thief and take the gun from where they'd both left it on the kitchen island. She knew she was being stupid. Keith was a good shot. He should be teaching her. But for some reason, she wanted to do it alone. Perhaps it was that she wasn't ready to eat crow after their argument, even though he wouldn't try to rub it in. More likely, it was that she didn't want him to see how scared she was, holding a thing that was intended to hurt someone, to kill someone. She didn't want him to know that the idea of using it made her feel sick to her stomach, because she knew he'd see it as a weakness,
a sign that she really wasn't ready for this kind of work. So instead, she'd spent the morning Googling how to load and shoot a revolver. She found a video blog giving step-by-step instructions, starring a plump, cheerful ex-cop from Florida who managed to put a hole through the target's head every single time. Veronica took aim again downrange, trying to focus on the target, and fired. The only other people at the range were a heavyset man with two teenage sons, all of them in camo. The man had a slabby jaw and short, bristling hair. His sons wore matching baseball caps in neon orange. They had a dozen guns between them and were taking turns in a variety of Rambo poses, jeering at one another for every missed shot. Veronica couldn't hear them through the enormous plastic earmuffs, but she'd got the gist. A few times their eyes twitched slyly toward her, and she caught an ain't she cute smile on the dad's face once when he thought she wasn't looking. She fired again, thinking about the party and the knife Eduardo had pressed against her throat. She tried to get angry enough to enjoy this, to hate Eduardo enough to imagine his face on the target, and she did hate Eduardo. But the idea of killing him held no joy for her. She wanted to hurt him, it was true, she wanted revenge, but not like this. The gun was a snub-nosed .38 special, pocket size. It didn't look like a lot of gun, but the recoil slammed through her body with every shot. She reloaded, stood wide-legged, squared to the target, and shot all five rounds, slow and deliberate. Then she pushed the button that pulled the target back to her. It ran slowly back up the range, fluttering as it went. She'd hit it twice, once on the bare edge of the page, and another time in what would be the victim's shoulder. Victim. Is that how you're supposed to think of it? Or is it a perp? She gritted her teeth and hit the button to send the target back out. There was no sense in putting up a new one. She'd barely dented her first. She was turning to reload her gun when a hand touched her shoulder. She gave a start and whirled around. Weevil Navarro stood a few feet behind her, in a glossy black motorcycle jacket and jeans. His trim goatee framed lips that were pursed in a look that was part pensive, part tough guy. Outsized diamond studs punctuated both earlobes, and she could just make out the edges of the tattoos that climbed up his neck and down his arms. She carefully set the revolver down in its case, then took one muff off her ear. I don't think you're supposed to sneak up on someone holding a gun. You want to keep your knees soft, bent a little to absorb the shock. He lifted his head up, then down, a short appraising nod. Veronica gave him a skeptical smirk. Huh. I'm not actually sure if it's a good or bad idea to take advice from someone with a stolen weapons rap. Hey, you know as well as I do that Glock was planted. He straightened up and moved into a shooting stance to show her, bouncing a little on the balls of his feet. You can lean forward a little from the waist, too. It'll help with balance. She watched him for a moment, but didn't move to pick up the gun. She and Weevil went way back, and while she was pretty sure she could call him a friend, the relationship had sometimes been complicated. In high school, he'd headed the PCH bike club, and there had been a whole mutual back-scratching agreement between them. Veronica knew she could call him in for muscle if she needed it, and sometimes he was good for information on Neptune's underworld. Veronica, for her part, had helped him out of a few tight spots, including juvie. But she'd seen just how far he would go to stay on top, and just how much destruction he could cause. When she'd returned to Neptune a few short months ago, he'd been on the straight and narrow. She'd seen with her own eyes how he looked at his wife, and it made her feel, what, happy for him? Jealous? That even Eli Weevil Navarro could settle down and find some kind of peace, when she thought she'd go out of her skin if she had one more long, quiet, calm afternoon? But when Celeste Kane shot him, claiming self-defense, a stolen gun had ended up in his unconscious hands. Since then, something had changed. He was back on the bike, roaring through the streets of Neptune with his old gang, believing that if the system was rigged, This was the only way to give himself a fighting chance. And suddenly the thought made her deeply, achingly sad. Because they were both back in it. Because it looked like neither one of them would ever be able to walk away from the past, no matter how hard they tried.
"So what are you doing here, anyway?"
Veronica asked. "I saw that fancy car you've been driving in the parking lot, and I thought to myself, I gotta see this, Veronica Mars with a gun, like you weren't scary enough already."
She looked down at the revolver, nestled against the bright foam packing.
"Dad wants me to learn."
"Smart man."
Weevil picked up the gun and weighed it in his hands. "This is a shit town. You gotta look out for yourself."
He aimed out downrange, cowboy style, gun in one hand.
"I heard you got into it up at the Gutierrez party."
"Who told you that?"
"Oh, you know, I follow you on Twitter. At too nosy for her own damn good."
Veronica faked a smirk, then became serious.
"So you know the Gutierrez cousins?"
He turned to look at her, pointing the gun carefully downward.
"I know of them. Trust me, V. There are some things in this town even I stay clear of. I'd say you should take my example, but you've never been smart enough to listen to good advice."
She shook her head. "Weevil, there are two missing girls. I have to try to find them."
"Yeah? I heard they got the guy who killed them."
She grimaced.
"Willie Murphy?
I have my doubts. Yesterday the families got ransom messages from someone who claims the girls are still alive. If you know anything about these guys that can help me find those girls?"
Weevil sighed and set the gun down. He rubbed the corner of his jaw with his thumb. "Look, like I said, I steer clear of that whole scene. I don't know much, but I can tell you this. The millennials don't do any kind of business in this town."
She frowned.
"But Eduardo and Rico are two squeaky clean schoolboys with no records. And you bet your ass they want to keep it that way. They got a good thing going here. They're out of the line of fire, they're getting educated, and they have a chance to wash all that dirty money clean by dumping it straight into a legitimate business."
"But the millennials are known for taking hostages, holding people ransom. There are hundreds of documented cases where they take some university student right off the streets," Veronica argued.
"In Mexico," he said. He shook his head. "Use your brain, V. What kingpin in his right mind is gonna order the kidnapping of two white American girls? He'd risk bringing the FBI or the DEA right down on his head, when he's got such a nice arrangement here."
$1.2 million in ransom is a lot of money.
That's chump change to these guys."
He shoved his hands in his pockets.
"I don't know. It's possible Los Primos Gutierrez have gone rogue. Maybe they're trying to get a bigger piece."
"Maybe they just like hurting people and no one has ever told them no." Veronica's voice was low and tense. Weevil shrugged.
"Maybe. But all I'm saying is, these guys don't shit where they eat. There's no way El Oso sanctioned any of this. Not a kidnapping, not a murder. And if he found out those kids went off book, I'm guessing there'd be hell to pay."
Then he shrugged again.
"But like I said, I don't ask too many questions about those guys, so maybe I don't know what I'm talking about."
Veronica nodded slowly. She picked up the gun and ejected the cylinder. Her fingers weren't shaking anymore. She loaded 5 more rounds.
"Did they hurt you?"
Weevil's voice was quiet behind her. A few bays away, the teen boys and their father were packing up their guns. One of the kids was watching her and Weevil with watery, pale eyes. She curled her lip at him, and he turned away, blushing.
"I'm okay."
Then she shut the cylinder with a click.
"You should put some earmuffs on."
Then she shot 5 more times in quick succession. The sound echoed distantly around her skull, the powder sharp and oddly sweet in her nose. When she hit the button to call the target back, she'd gotten 2 more shots into the perp's silhouette. One was low in the gut, and the other went right through his head. Chapter 24. The sheriff's department was thrumming with energy when she arrived on Sunday morning.
In the parking lot out front, reporters stood vigil, waiting for new information. Veronica caught sight of Martina Vasquez, taking a few quick drags of her cigarette before picking up her microphone and smiling into the camera. She wanted to talk to Willie Murphy. She knew it'd be a long shot, now that Lamb had him in custody, a perfect patsy. He wouldn't want anyone digging too much deeper, but she had to try, because otherwise, she was out of sources on the Gutierrez cousins.
"Care to tell our viewers what you think of the sheriff's handling of the DeWalt Scott kidnapping case, miss?"
A man with Ken doll hair thrust a microphone under her chin. She scuttled backward, away from him. "No, thank you," she said. She turned where the door to the building should be and walked right into someone. It was Crane DeWalt, pale and slouching. Behind him stood the rest of his family, and a fifth person, a short, stocky man.
"Hi, Mr. and Mrs. DeWalt. Crane, Ella, how are you guys holding up?"
Haley's mother stepped forward and took Veronica's hand.
"As well as can be expected, I suppose."
"Have there been any new messages about Haley?"
"Don't answer that," said the man.
Veronica turned to frown at him.
"No offense," he added. "We just want to keep the information very controlled right now."
He was dressed in a rumpled button-down shirt and ill-fitting chinos, no tie, no jacket, and had a jowly, sagging face. The hair on the top of his head was thin and receding, but behind that it was curly and overgrown. A pair of thick-lensed glasses magnified his eyes and gave him an expression of mild surprise. More than anything, he looked like a particularly disgruntled civics teacher. Mrs. DeWalt gestured toward him.
"Veronica Mars, this is Miles Oxman."
"I'm a private security consultant," he said.
A card manifested from somewhere in his jacket, the corners creased. "Gull and Associates" was printed at the top, above his name. She slid it into her purse.
"Mr. Oxman is helping us with the details of the ransom," Mrs. DeWalt said, wringing her hands in front of her. "We don't want to make any mistakes."
Veronica shrugged the straps of her purse more securely into place.
"So, were you here questioning Murphy?"
Oxman's wide mouth stretched a little wider, his jowls tucking back into a smile.
"At this point, Ms. Mars, I'm not interested in who took Haley. I'm here to make sure the ransom exchange goes smoothly and that we get Haley back in one piece."
"We can't sit around hoping that someone will catch the criminals who took her. All we can do is follow their orders and get our daughter back."
Mrs. DeWalt's gentle blue eyes were moist and tired.
"Not that we don't appreciate all your help. You did your best for us."
"Unlike some," spat her husband, speaking for the first time. "No offense, ma'am, but is everyone in this town a moron? How'd that idiot ever get elected sheriff?"
"Mike,"
whispered Mrs. DeWalt, but without real conviction.
"It's okay, Mrs. DeWalt. It's not the first time someone has said exactly what I'm thinking."
Veronica looked at Oxman.
"What about the Scotts? Are you working with them too?"
Mrs. DeWalt's lips went thin.
"We talked to them about it. We thought it'd be easier, safer even, to have one expert managing both cases, but they weren't interested. They said they had their own guy."
"They say who they're working with?"
Oxman asked, rocking slightly on the balls of his feet.
The Meridian Group, I think? Someone named Lee Jackson?"
"Oh yeah, they're good. Lee's got a great reputation."
Oxman seemed unconcerned with the competition.
"Very good."
A cry suddenly went up a few feet away. Mrs. DeWalt jumped, clutching at her throat. The rest of them whirled around to see what was happening. Ella stood hugging herself, backed against a lamppost by the same plastic-haired reporter who had tried to chase Veronica. He waved the microphone almost threateningly at her.
"Do you have anything to say to your sister? What about to her captors? How's it all been for you, Ella? Are you scared?"
It happened so fast no one could stop it. Crane slapped the microphone away. Then he pulled back his fist and landed an uppercut right into Ken Doll's jaw, sending the reporter staggering backward into his cameraman. Somewhere across the parking lot, someone screamed. There was the sound of people running, and then four officers in Sheriff's Department khakis came pushing out the doors.
A moment later, Lam came striding behind them. He must have sensed an opportunity to posture in front of the media. He wore mirrored aviator shades that he no doubt grabbed the moment he heard raised voices.
"Stay away from my fucking sister!" Crane screamed, fists clenched at his sides.
Behind him, Ella was crying, silently, big blobby tears rolling down her cheeks. Mrs. DeWalt ran to her, pulling her close and staring wildly around. The reporter was on the ground, a dazed and distant expression on his face. A deputy touched Crane's arm, and he jerked away. Other reporters sprinted across the parking lot as they scented blood, and already cameras were flashing. One deputy helped the fallen reporter to his feet while Lam himself stepped in front of Crane.
"I'm going to have to ask you to step inside, Mr. DeWalt." "Oh, you got off your asses for this, huh?" Crane sneered.
The veins on his forearms strained against his skin, Hulk style. He stood, shoulders back, ready to take another swing if he had to.
"I finally figured out what it takes, then."
A deputy kneeled down to inspect the reporter's injuries. Another gently led Ella and her mother back toward the glass double doors. Crane's chest heaved visibly. For a horrible, wonderful moment, Veronica thought he might swing a punch at Lam. Then he seemed to collapse, the rage dissipating all at once. He held up his hands, both a surrender and a mark of disgust. Lam watched one of the remaining officers lead him to the doors. Mr. DeWalt followed, flushed beet red.
"It's all under control, everyone!"
Lam turned toward the cluster of reporters, whipping his shades off with a flourish.
"Just a scuffle. You all right, Langston? Come on, get him inside. We'll go ahead and take a statement."
Lam basked in the camera flashes for a few minutes until the reporters lost interest. As they started to draw away, he turned to the doors. That was when he caught sight of Veronica. His eyes narrowed.
"What are you doing here?"
100 smart-assed answers sprang to her lips, but for once, she swallowed them. She forced a smile that could charitably be called polite.
"I was hoping to ask Willie Murphy a few questions."
But Lam was already shaking his head no.
"Forget it, Mars.
Even if I wanted to let you in, which, by the way, I don't, Murphy isn't taking any visitors." He smirked. "And I doubt he'd talk to you anyway. You don't accuse a man of kidnapping and murder one day, then ask him out for coffee the next."
"I didn't..." "Okay, there are so many things wrong with that statement, I'm not even going to bother." She gave him an exasperated look. Should have gone with the smart-ass answer after all. At least then I'd have the satisfaction of a job well done.
"Now if you'll excuse me, I have to go talk to young Mr. DeWalt about his attitude."
He gave her another smug little grin, turned to nod at Oxman, and went back inside.
"They'll have to book the kid. They can't let him get away with that," Oxman said conversationally.
He yawned, revealing a mouthful of coffee-yellowed teeth.
"Are you still working the case?"
"Yeah, I am. At least until I find out what happened to Aurora and Haley." He adjusted his collar. She caught sight of the sweat stains beneath his arms.
"The best thing you can do for the safety of those girls is step back and let us do our thing."
He lowered his voice. "These cartels don't play games. I know. I've been dealing with them for more than a decade."
"So you think the Millennials have her?"
"I didn't say that." His eyes darted around the parking lot. Veronica blinked. The very word Millennials seemed to make him jump.
"I don't know who took Haley DeWalt, and frankly, I don't want to know. But I'll tell you this. 3 hours ago, Murphy dismissed his public defender. Now he's got Schultz and Associates representing him."
"Schultz? They're huge and expensive." She frowned. "How is Willie Murphy affording that kind of firepower?"
"Exactly."
He stabbed at the air with one index finger.
"Maybe Weevil had it wrong after all. Schultz and Associates were high profile, and they weren't always easy to get even if you had the money. You had to be connected, important, and as far as she knew, Willie Murphy didn't even have a permanent home to call his own. Someone wanted him protected. Someone with leverage."
But did Eduardo and Rico want him protected to cover up murder and kidnapping, or something else?
Look, I can't tell you what to do, kid, but proceed with caution.
Oxman rubbed his nose between his index finger and thumb, then sighed. One of my colleagues got snatched down in Oaxaca last year. Disappeared without a trace while he was working a case. So they're not above taking the so-called experts in order to keep us out of their business. He shrugged. And you might want to do us all a favor and wait until we have the girls back home before you go stirring up too much shit.
As he took a few steps toward the parking lot, an idea dawned on her.
Hey, did you catch the name of the public defender who got fired?
Oxman shrugged.
Can't remember. But I understand it was some low-rent local guy.
He thought about it for a moment.
McSomething.
A slow smile stretched over Veronica's face. Bingo. Chapter 25. The wind picked up as Veronica arrived at the Scott's condo later that day. Thin clouds skidded across the sky, and the trees murmured softly as their branches caught each gust. She grabbed a pink box from the passenger seat of the BMW and walked slowly toward the front door. At first, Veronica hadn't realized the date. Not until she was leaving her third message on Cliff McCormick's voicemail. I need to talk to you. It's urgent. It's Sunday, March 23rd, just after 3. Call me back. And as she hung up the phone, the date had burned on her lips. March 23rd, her mother's birthday. She really didn't want to admit that she still remembered it, but there it was, written in indelible ink in some part of her mind. It went with a handful of memories she didn't love to relive. Leanne tossing back cheap martinis at a mid-range steakhouse where they'd celebrated her birthday, getting so drunk she fell on the dessert cart. Another year, when they'd thrown a party for her at the house and she hadn't even shown up. When she'd staggered in the door at 3 that morning, she and Keith had had one of the few truly nasty fights. And other memories that were, in a way, even worse. The year they'd taken an afternoon dinner cruise, and the three of them had stood silent and peaceful on the deck watching whales play in the wake of the ship. The year Keith brought home Backup, a tiny, wiggly puppy with an enormous bow around his neck, and Leanne had carried him in her arms like a baby all afternoon. Veronica adjusted the box in her hands. Was it tacky to get a cake during a hostage crisis? What was the protocol? She pictured chocolate frosting with white lettering, "Happy birthday. Hope your daughter isn't dead." But this was her 50th year, a year with a zero. Veronica had to do something. So on her way to the condo, she'd swung by a bakery and picked up a small German chocolate cake. It was her mom's favorite, or at least it had been, a decade ago. Leanne jerked the door open moments after the doorbell rang, as if she'd been waiting for it. She gave a little jolt when she saw Veronica. Then she opened the door a little wider.
"Veronica, hi. Sorry, I was expecting... Come on in. We're on the terrace."
She followed her mother through the house. It looked much the same, if a bit more lived in. A hodgepodge of instruments was strewn across the living room floor. A plastic toy accordion, a miniature xylophone, a full-size tambourine with half the zills missing. Half-empty glasses cluttered the coffee table, next to a small stack of newspaper crossword puzzles pocked with eraser marks. A greasy smell hung on the air, the remnants of a week of hastily eaten fast food. Leanne opened the glass doors and led her out to a balcony jutting out over the bluff. It was decorated with cool slate tile, a wrought iron railing, and a retractable sunshade. Large earthen pots of bougainvillea and philodendron sat in every corner and cranny, giving the deck a lush, jungly look. At the far end of the balcony, Tanner sat submerged in a sleek, curving jacuzzi tub, head resting back against an inflatable pillow. He waved as they came in.
"Veronica, we weren't expecting you."
"Hi, Mr. Scott," she said. Then, as an afterthought, "Tanner?" Hunter sat at a round glass table with an ancient Casio synthesizer,
the rhythm set to bossa nova, plucking at the keys, one finger at a time. His hair stuck up in the back, and there was a smear of something, barbecue sauce maybe, at the corner of his mouth. Veronica smiled at him as she set the box down on the table.
Hi, Hunter. How's it going?
He shrugged, his eyes wary.
I thought you were the kidnapping specialist, Leanne said, sliding the glass doors shut. He's supposed to arrive any minute.
So you guys are going to pay the ransom?
Of course we are.
Leanne took a few steps around the deck, aimless and tense. She wore the same Find Aurora t-shirt Tanner had been wearing on Friday. Aurora's face looked strangely stretched out, almost like it was warped with pain. Veronica watched her mother's movements, simultaneously jerky and controlled, as if she was thinking about every step, every reach, like she was just waiting for someone to jump out of the bushes and scream, "Boo!" It was familiar, painfully familiar. That was how Leanne had always acted in the days before a relapse.
"What's this for?"
They all turned to look at Hunter, who had taken the lid off the box and was staring down at the cake. Veronica gave an uncomfortable little laugh.
"Oh, that, well..." She gave Leanne a nervous smile.
"I know it's not exactly a happy birthday, but I thought we should at least have some cake."
Leanne's eyes fell on the box, then darted up to meet Veronica's. For a moment they stared at each other. Leanne's mouth fell open, her cheeks pink as well.
"Birthday?"
Tanner glanced from Leanne to Veronica and back again. "It's... oh, Christ. I forgot again, didn't I?" He heaved himself out of the jacuzzi, water slopping around the sides of the tub. His swim trunks were bright green with a palm tree print all over them. A few old scars ran across his torso, white against his suntanned skin.
"It's fine, Tanner. There's been so much going on. I almost forgot myself."
"We should have planned something."
He toweled off, then put a damp arm around Leanne's shoulders and kissed the side of her head.
"Hunter, we forgot your mama's birthday. We're gonna have to make it up to her."
"How come she remembered it?"
Hunter asked, staring at Veronica. The bossa nova drumbeat grooved its way into the silence that stretched out between them all. Was this the moment to tell a 6-year-old boy that, by the way, his mom had another kid? To try to explain why Veronica wasn't a part of their life? Hunter's brow was rumpled up in a painfully familiar way, the family forehead, skeptical and anxious. The forehead of a kid who saw everything, heard everything, even if he didn't understand what he was seeing or hearing yet. Veronica and Leanne's eyes met over the top of the little boy's head. Then Leanne slowly sat down at the table next to Hunter, putting a hand on each arm so that he'd look at her.
"Hunter, we haven't been totally honest with you," she said, her voice trembling. "You know how Rory's your half-sister from your dad's previous marriage? Well, Veronica's your half-sister on the other side. She's my daughter. She's your sister."
Hunter's little brow furrowed deeper. For a moment, Veronica wondered if he was about to cry. She realized she was holding her breath, her heart racing, and she almost laughed. How was it, after the week she'd had, that a 6-year-old's reaction to the news that she was his sister could make her so nervous? Then Hunter looked back at the cake.
"So are we going to eat it?"
Leanne's lips trembled. She leaned forward to hug Hunter, a single tear rolling down her cheek.
"Yes, baby. We're going to eat it. I'll get a knife. Can you say thank you to Veronica?"
"Thanks for the cake," he said.
Then he hit a few experimental keys on the keyboard and sang it.
"Thanks for the cake!"
Leanne went into the house to get plates and silverware, Hunter following at her heels and singing to himself. Tanner and Veronica were alone. The awkwardness was almost deafening.
"Thanks so much for making sure your mom had a nice birthday, Veronica." He shook his head. "I'd like to say I forgot because of...
all this, Aurora being missing and all, but the truth is I'm pretty bad at birthdays. It's a flaw of mine. But it's not for lack of caring, I just killed too many damn brain cells.
He gave a hoarse laugh and sat down across the table from her.